that gospel passage that we read a moment ago, one of the better known stories which Jesus told, the prodigal son. It's a character known and referred to, well, far beyond the church. And that's great that it's such a well-known story, and yet sometimes its very familiarity can become a bit of a problem for us. Because we might well have learned this story a long time before today. We may well have heard the story when we were children. But this is not a children's story. It's very much set in an adult world. And as we know, relationships among adults are rarely straightforward or simple. Jesus' parables, these illustrations he uses to tell people something about the kingdom of God, they were never set in some sort of fairy tale land. They were always realistic, set in the world that we know all too well. So if we never come to review how we understand this story, if we get stuck with the way we've understood it at a much younger stage in our life, we might just be missing some of its power, some of its shock value, some of its challenge. So today, let's at least try to imagine the impact that story must have had when people first heard it. Those adults to whom Jesus was speaking, hearing it for the first time. Let's try to imagine the kind of reactions it must have evoked in them. For example, it might not sound shocking to us in any sense that a son would want to have his share of the family inheritance while he's still young enough to go out and enjoy it. But in the context of the culture of that time, he was being greedy, he was being disrespectful, he was going against everything the society would have assumed and would have expected. Remember, it's the younger son. In the culture, it's the elder son who would inherit the family inheritance. And even that, of course, would only happen after the father had very sadly passed on and they had mourned. And even then, the assumption would be that the son inheriting all this land would continue the family tradition of farming the land and caring for it, ready to pass it on to the next generation. The younger son comes into the story, and he seems to have no interest in any of that stuff. He's got no respect for his father, no interest in what his ancestors have worked so hard to build up and to pass on through the generations. Those who listened to that part of the story, they would have been waiting with bated breath to hear what the father is going to do to a son who dares to ask for something like that. How might he teach him a lesson? What kind of punishment is he going to have ready for him? But no, what a disappointment this story turns out to be. There's no drama at all. Amazingly, the father just gives the son everything he's asked for. No word of rebuke, no word of warning, just yes, there you go, take whatever you want, and that's all there is to it. Why on earth would he do that? It doesn't make any sense. What's the father trying to achieve, just giving all that to such a wayward son? Well, soon the inevitable happens. The boy who's been given all that, he sells his share of the inheritance. He goes off to live in a foreign land, but many of us are not in a place to condemn that in itself, so we can overlook that bit of the story. He goes off to a foreign land, and unlike us, he wastes it all. He spends it all in partying and irresponsibility, let's just say. A very different kind of lifestyle. And at this point in the story, as Jesus is telling this story, we can imagine the people who are hearing it for the first time. Heads would be shaking, eyes would be rolling, tuts would be audibly heard. Young people nowadays, what are they like? I've said it myself, so So, Jesus is telling this story, and it's now clear to the people who are listening to this story, the Son is an absolute waste of space, and the Father doesn't seem to know right from wrong in any sense at all. Both of them are baddies, as the story is being told. And so, while the initial part of the story didn't make any sense, now there's a sense of contentment. Now the story starts to make sense. Because it all goes wrong. Of course it all goes wrong. That's what's going to happen for people who disregard our traditional ways. The boys lived this lavish, extravagant lifestyle, but now he falls into poverty. Yes. That's how it should work. That's what happens if people move away from God's ways. They'll suffer for it soon enough, you know. The boy in the story has fallen so far. He's got so little regard for God that he ends up working with pigs. A job, of course, considered disgusting, forbidden in the Jewish culture. So, Jesus is telling this story, and the original people listening to the story at last understand this is a good traditional morality tale. If people break God's laws, they will suffer for it. And, better still, as the story goes on, it seems as if there's going to be a lovely comic ending to the story. Because this boy, who's wasted all that and who's fallen from grace, he's going to go back and try and apologise and try and plead for even more from his father. Let me at least have a job as one of your servants. Well, this will be good. The father will really put him in his place now. The father can really humiliate him and twist the knife and make it clear how wrong he's been, how bad he is. Except, of course, there's another shock in store. Because that's not what happens. Instead of the son losing whatever dignity he had left, it's the father who throws off his dignity, casts off all hint of self-respect, and thinking only about the son who'd got so lost, he goes charging up the road to welcome him with open arms, to wrap him in a robe of acceptance, and to organise the biggest party his house had ever seen. Oh, no, that's not right. That's not how a story's supposed to end. What's that all about? What sort of father would do that? And what sort of village would attend such a party, indicating their acceptance of this sort of immoral behaviour? That's not right. And so we can imagine people listening to this story grumbling. They're asking questions of each other. This sense of unease, this sense of dissatisfaction. The original listeners to this story, they must have wondered what on earth it was meant to be about. It didn't make any sense. With the benefit of time, we, much later hearers of the same story, we who know much more about Jesus' teaching and what his life was about, we might be able to say a bit more. It's a story about God. It's a story about us. It's a story about life. It's a story about how we all tend to drift away from where we ought to be, how we all tend to be selfish and seek things that are wrong. It's a story about the possibility of finding the honesty in ourselves to finally recognise that, and the courage to take the first steps to do something about it. It's a story, we would say, about undeserved grace, about a God who's so much more generous than we have any right to expect. Once we get past our cosy, childlike understanding of the story, we discover that it's shockingly powerful and powerfully shocking. We are challenged about the way we might judge other people. We are challenged about the way we might think about God. Here we find a whole new set of possibilities for those who are lost and wandering and who get caught up in all sorts of traps, here we find a whole new set of possibilities for ourselves. When we find that we're lost and wandering and have been caught up in all sorts of traps. All of that is there, and that's only the first half of the story. Because the original listeners, with all their assumptions and all their expectations, they would at least then find there's someone in this story they can relate to. Because we're then told about the elder brother. Well, he's the good guy. He's the one who's done the right thing. He's stayed home. He's worked the land. He's been obedient to his father. There's no hint, as Jesus tells the story, that he's done anything wrong, that there's any kind of sin in his life. Okay, he might have been a bit dull, but he was dutiful, and he's done the right thing, and he's a clean living young man. And he seems to be the only one, as the story is first told, to have any sense. He's the only one who actually comes into question the madness going on in this story. It seems that the father can't understand why the elder son is so upset. So the son keeps himself separate from all this going on. He doesn't want to be associated with it. He's not going to go along and enjoy a party and pretend that everything's all right when everything that is all right is being turned upside down by the way the father is reacting. The younger son has broken the rules. He's thrown away his opportunities. He's wasted so much. He's no right to be there. He's done nothing to deserve this. The elder son is the one who sticks to his principles. Not for him. All this talk about forgiveness and reconciliation. He's the one in the story who knows right from wrong. So, as the story is being told, we might wonder, is there going to be some sting in the tale now that the common sense character has been brought into the story? Is Jesus going to turn things around suddenly so that the father actually gives an even greater reward to the good son? And perhaps find some dramatic turn in which he punishes the bad son? No. The story ends up in a terrible anticlimax, because it just sort of stops there. All we get are a few words from the father about how his son was lost, but now he's found, and having been restored to life, he's no choice but to celebrate and to rejoice. The story just stops there. And the listeners, then and now, we're left with so many questions. It's as if we're waiting for a sequel coming next in the exciting episode. Does the elder son actually understand that the father loves him as well? Will they ever be able to sort out that relationship? Will the elder son ever be able to accept the younger son back into the family and forgive him as his father seems to have done? Does the younger son actually accept the forgiveness of his father? Or is he still wracked by guilt and failure? Is he ever able to begin life differently again because of his father's acceptance? Or maybe he'll just take what he can get and run off with it again. What happens next? We don't know. Because, as always, when Jesus tells stories as powerful as this, the purpose of the story is not to entertain us. It's not to satisfy our curiosity. He's telling a story to get under our skin a bit, to challenge our assumptions, to teach us some core truths about this big message he has about what he calls the kingdom of God, living in God's presence. Because he's saying, when we see that possibility for what it really is, we see that this parable is actually a story about us. It's a story about about people who sometimes do act rashly and irresponsibly and selfishly. It's a story about people like us who sometimes do get ourselves into a bit of a mess, and who sometimes wonder if there's any hope for people like us, who sometimes wonder if there really can be forgiveness and acceptance given what we know about ourselves. This parable is about us, people who are sometimes resentful and proud and arrogant. People who sometimes find it easier to stick to our hardened principles than to show any sort of compassion or understanding to those who are different. It's a story about people like us who want to be servants of God and who are challenged to have the kind of heart that hurts for those who are lost and suffering in our world. Challenged to have those kind of arms that are ready to be flung wide in welcome to any lost soul who looks in our direction for a bit of help. No matter what they might have done, no matter what mistakes they may have made, no matter how unacceptable we might think their behaviour has been. As I said, it's a shockingly powerful story, this. And it's a powerfully shocking story. And in the end, it is a story of hope. And it is a story of challenge, because here we are again moving towards Easter, where we see Jesus speaking words of forgiveness and words of hope to criminals who have been crucified alongside him. Speaking words of forgiveness even to those who have put him on the cross. This same Jesus who told the story of the prodigal son, this same Jesus who calls us to follow him, sticks to his message of forgiveness and hope right to the end, even for the most guilty of people. It's a powerful story, isn't it? May this story always be one that we remain familiar with, and may its power and its purpose play their part in shaping our lives going forward. If there's been anything in our readings or these words that have spoken to you or struck you, then just take a moment to guard that thought and to cherish it as we listen to some music.